Hi, and welcome to Aging in Place for every stage in life. What if you could visit or have a home that would accommodate anyone at any age, any physical ability, at any time? How cool would that be? That's what we're doing here at Aging in Place. Why me? Because I'm a doctor of psychology, and I specialize in physical spaces and health and wellness. Also, I love designing with intent at any age. Why now? Because we, the baby boomers, want to age in place gracefully, and we want our families around us as much as we can. And why you, the audience? Because we want you to experience what it's like to have a home that's safe, aesthetically pleasing, and that you can live in at any age, with any ability, at any time. I'd like to introduce you now to Aging in Place podcast for every stage in life. Hi, and welcome to Aging in Place podcast for any stage in life. I'm Dr. Debbie Hines, and I'm here today with a dear friend and colleague, Brad Baker. Brad, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Debbie, for having me. I appreciate your time.
Well, I told you before as we got started, this is a time when we're going to share a little bit about substance abuse treatments. And as we get older, we oftentimes, I think that substance use and abuse isn't something that we really need to pay attention to, but it really is. What I'd like to do is do three different segments. And in this first segment, talk a little bit about you and your background. So tell us, Brad, because you and I have had the opportunity to work together on a lot of occasions, and I think you all, the audience, will find him really interesting. Talk a little bit about your background.
So my background is I come from the military. I was 12 years as a combat medic for the U.S. Army Rangers, as well as the 82nd Airborne. Once I got out, I formed a group here in Atlanta. I moved to Atlanta and I formed a group, and we were initially called the Bradley Intervention Center. And we were a group of former special operations and former federal law enforcement agencies represented by DEA and U.S. Marshals. And we basically just went around the country and we located missing persons, and then we would bring them home because we really didn't know any better. As we got into it, we recognized the need for the individuals that we were locating to, we recognized the need that they were challenged with other things such as substance abuse or trauma. So we started to learn more about the world of treatment, and that's really how we became, you know, a part of this industry.
And one of the things that I wanted to bring up is that Brad and I have worked together in a lot of different capacities, and he was one of my mentors and teachers when I first went into the field of substance abuse, eating disorders, really, of psychology. And he is nationally and internationally very well known and respected in his knowledge of the treatment industry and treatment world. And I think what's been interesting, and I think what our viewers find interesting, or listeners will find interesting, is how treatment has evolved over time. And a lot of the different options that are available right now that we even have, what, Brad, 5 or 10 years ago. So let's talk about what you're doing now. And that case in point will bring us to where we are right now, some treatment options.
Right. And it has changed. The landscape has changed from a business aspect as well as a individualized treatment aspect. Mm-hmm. You know, you had years ago, you had hundreds and hundreds of treatment facilities that were out there. And then, you know, big industries and private wealth management came in, and, you know, they saw where, hey, they could really make a profit. And it in my opinion, it tanked the quality of care and the industry. What we're seeing now is those large groups are still out there, but they're being managed a little differently. And as a result of that, what you're seeing is people are going out and starting their own treatment programs or facilities, and they're going back to the basics of when it truly was an individualized type treatment, where not one size fit all. And I think that's where we're making a impact in our market, we've started Creekside Recovery Residences, and it's what would typically be called sober living, but we've taken the apartment model and turned it into a house model where you live in your own bedroom. You're not sharing a bedroom. It's a smaller community, and it's individualized to the point of you come to us from treatment or maybe from an IOP, and there's no...
And for someone who doesn't know what...
I'm sorry.
Tell them what an IOP is.
Intensive outpatient program where you're going maybe two or three nights a week. And you come to us with no preconceived idea of what treatment for you should look like. So in other words, we're truly building it around what you need. If you need work with a trauma therapist, we'll find that. If you need neurobiofeedback, we'll go find that. Massage, acupuncture, partial hospitalization. Basically, you know, and we're using technology. SoberLink has been huge for us, where it's a facial recognition breathalyzer that we set people up 2, 3, 4 times a day. So we're truly meeting the client where they're at, identifying clinically what's most appropriate for them, and then bringing all that together and have it managed by a case manager. And then you get into all the other plays of whether it's substance abuse, mental health, eating disorders, seniors. Everybody is different on how you're going to work with that population. And that's the space we're in. And then we're going to treatment programs and talking with them about how they're doing it. And we're all starting to collaborate together again, which is the piece that was taken out years ago. So I'm real excited to see how everybody is working together, sharing information and collaborating.
And all for the good of the client. I think for many people, you know, the premise of this podcast is at any age, at any time in our life, we are aging. And so what we're trying to do here is sort of make some of the things that are appropriate, well, make everything ubiquitous so everyone has an opportunity to age in place in the correct way. We talk about treatment for any kind of substance abuse. There used to be, exactly like you said, it was basically a one way we treated everyone. And I think in my past 20 years in this industry, it's gone 100% the opposite. It is very individualized because not one person is alike. One of the things that I noticed from a psychological standpoint, and Brad, I think you and I talk about this all the time, is we really have done a pretty good job of breaking the stigma that having a problem with a substance is a character issue. In fact, and you and I talk about this, it used to be the word addiction. A lot of what we use now is more of a dependence. Are you a user, an abuser? Are you dependent? And I think when we talk about people who are appropriate for treatment or programs now, it's a lot more broad spectrum than it used to be. There's no reason that I'm speaking Brad talk. There's no reason to have to hit the bottom of the barrel now. Okay, there's no reason to rock bottom. There are too many options available. And just like you said, with what you're doing, that's one way that we can really mitigate people going to treatment and then getting in trouble again. We provide safety net.
Right. And I think that, you know, you and I have had discussions out on your back deck forever about this. Is my favorite saying is, one way does not work for everyone. If it did, there'd only be one way to treat this. And I think that what we're finding out now is people who are coming into the business end of treatment, they recognize that. And they're like, hey, we have all these other things, technology, and we have a way to really drill down when we're doing screening and assessments that maybe weren't being used. And maybe, you know, it wasn't best practice back then because it just wasn't shared information. Sure. So I think that as people, you know, as we move forward, I'm excited because, you know, what we're doing is excited at Creekside. I mean, I love it, but what I love more is reaching out, especially now doing all these Zooms that we're doing because of COVID-19, but we're hearing more people share more information. And in doing that, you know, we only become a stronger community in being able to help people.
Take a quick break. I'm going to come right back, Brad. And what I'd love to do is let's talk a little about what substance use, abuse, and dependence is, and how do we even know, and where do I reach out if I think that I have an issue or one of my loved ones. So stay with us. We'll be right back here on Aging in Place. Hi, I'm Dr. Debbie Lines. Design elements are psychologically and physically supportive and conducive to health and wellness. To learn more about what Lines on Design can do for you, for more information on certified aging in place and facilitative and supportive design, look for us at linesondesign.com. That's L-Y-N-E-S on design.com. We are back here on Aging in Place podcast for any stage in life. I am here with Brad Baker. He is the owner of what used to be called a sober living, but not so much now. It's a really innovative way to case manage and allow people a step down in this D-net from going through treatment into full recovery and health. So Brad, again, thank you. What I'd like to know is, from the time you started, let's talk a little bit about how you look at substance use, substance abuse, and then dependence. How do people really know when it's time to reach out for help, and how can they do that?
Right. Well, I think that a lot of times in working with families, in my experience, families tend to always look for a reason to justify the actions that are going on, because they don't, they don't want to label their loved one as being that person who has a problem. And if you mm-hmm. look, with our years of being involved in this, you can look at a calendar and I can tell you when treatment facilities are going to have the most people in it, because it's usually after family gatherings over holidays when everybody says, hey, Uncle Johnny, and if your name's Uncle Johnny, I apologize, but hey, Uncle Johnny has a problem. Right. We need to get Uncle Johnny some help. It's often the closest ones just really want to try to justify and really not come to that conclusion that, hey, they need help. But finally, there's usually something that finally happens. The last boot drops and, they immediately start searching for answers. And most people do what everybody else does and they get online and they just start searching endlessly,
And that worries me.
It does because with Google AdWords and a lot of other things that have been going on, it bothers everybody. So I think that the best thing that I tell, I always talk to people and they're like, I just don't know and everything. If the statistics are right and 1 in 3 or 1 in 5 or whatever it is, person deals with this, then you have to have a family member or a close friend who has gone or is going through this. Whether it's in a church or a social gathering or work or something. So the first thing is to reach out and just, hey,
exactly.
I have a friend who's going through this. I mean, however you want to put it, but people have gone through this and it's no different than I always tell people, hey man, if you had cancer and were diagnosed with cancer, you'd want to go reach out to other people who are diagnosed with cancer, because you want to know, what can I expect? What's it going to be like? And then they more than likely, 99% of the time, will point you to the professionals that maybe they used or they saw. And that's really the safest way to come into the funnel of getting help.
Exactly, because I think you know what you don't know. And at least I have found that the world of women is a very tiny world. And it is a world of the most caring and loving people that I've ever met in my life. And if there's a takeaway for today, it's that don't be afraid of asking for help. Because if you really look for professionals and connect you with, it's a tiny community of wonderful, wonderful treatment facilities. And people are out there to really make a difference and help.
Absolutely. And again, there's not too many industries where at 11 o'clock at night, somebody will pick up the phone and say, hey, let me walk you and let me talk you through this. I mean, I've had many conversations on my deck at 11 o'clock at night with families who are just concerned. So again, I think that, I always tell families when I was doing interventions, if you're going to engage in my service, first thing you have to do is turn your computer off. Because if you come to me and say, well, I found this program or that program on the internet, I'm going to fire you as a client. because it's too much information. You know, you have to be careful with that. But look, you're exactly right. It's a small community, and it's a community that, again, has moved back towards more sharing. And if you happen to get in touch with one program that maybe isn't specialized in a certain group, like eating disorder or seniors or trauma, they're going to send you over and point you to the right group, because nowadays everybody wants to help.
Well, and I think to your point, most of the place, all of the places that you and I deal with are basically there to help a certain population and will not take you if you're not appropriate. And I think that's one of the ways that you know that you have a good program, is they pretty much are not going to accept you if it's not a really good match. What I want to speak to real quickly, Brad, is you mentioned eating disorders. There's adolescent programs, but there's a rising surge in seniors who have substance dependence issues. And as an interesting aside, and you and I have talked, I did a presentation a year ago, and it was on marijuana, medical marijuana, on consequences of smoking marijuana, et cetera, et cetera. We did it. We did the presentation at a college nearby. Okay. 3/4 of the people there were over 50. 3/4 of the people. Yeah. You're not surprised at all.
No.
I think what we're seeing is, as people have more discretionary time and income, less purpose, if you will, maybe more time, less focus on business, it's hard to fill that. And oftentimes having a cocktail or two starting earlier and earlier happens, and before you know it, we need to do a reboot.
Absolutely. I agree with you. You know, I'm in my mid-50s. And I look at growing up, and, you know, the norm with the grandparents was 5 o'clock, the cart came out with the martinis, and, you know, everybody in the neighborhood got together. The norm now that I see in my demographics is everything's planned around being social. You know, whether it's football games, tailgate parties, you know, going to the movies, let's go get drinks and eat first. You know, and then what's the gap in between myself and my parents? It's, you know, it's changed because they have been successful, or they have more time on their hands, and they're looking to fill that gap. And, you know, all of a sudden you're finding people that have just built their lives around socializing and being social. And often times that's the slippery slope for that demographic of individuals.
And I know that, let's just talk, Karen Treatment Center is well-known internationally. And a lot of treatment facilities, Hazleton, have put together specific programs for seniors because, again, we love to mix demographics. I think in some areas that's great. But when it comes to treatment, oftentimes it's really nice to be with peers and cohorts because you men are experiencing similar kinds of things. Has that been your experience too?
Yeah. You know, I think that a lot when we first started 18 years ago, you know, I mean, it was pretty cut and dry. It was adolescent, young adults and professionals. You know, those were the categories. I think now, you know, I remember years and years and years ago, I think Hanley Hazleton was one of the first ones that had actually a senior program down there in West Palm Beach. And it was fantastic the way they laid it out with dietary, with, you know, their living quarters. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and you could sort of see that Karen was kind of ahead of the curve on that one for everybody else. And I think that still holds true now, because now I think you have, when you're talking about seniors, you're talking about professionals, you're talking about young adult professionals, you're talking about older professionals. You know, I've always been of the mindset that, you know, working specifically in your demographic or your population is a good thing. I never discount that it's not bad to sometimes cross the lines, because I love it that a young person could say, hey man, if I don't get my stuff together, this is my life.
Right.
I'll be back here when I'm 60. And there's 60-year-olds that can sort of look down, you know, look back to the younger and say, hey, let me help you out and show you the mistakes I made. In our recovery residences, we're taking that a step further, and we are breaking out into those populations because the housing looks different for all of those.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And
I think that you're going to see a lot more of that as we move forward.
I agree. Brad, we're going to have one more quick break, and we're going to come right back and continue our discussion where we left off. Stay with us. We'll be back here on Aging in Place podcast, Any Stage in Life.
For more podcast episodes, links, information, and media inquiries, please visit our website at agingInPlacePodcast.com as we transition through life with the comfort and ease you deserve. Discover how you can create a home that will adapt to you as you journey through life and the changes it will bring. Please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as our host, Debbie Lines, and her expert guests discuss relevant topics to creating a home for all decades in life. Don't miss our weekly episodes of Aging in Place podcast for every stage in life.
We are back here on Aging in Place podcast for any stage in life. We are back once again with Brad Baker, and we're talking about the changes in treatment of alcohol specifically, or substances. But we're really making this more broad spectrum in this segment, and we're talking about whether it's alcohol, any kind of substance, whether it is food, depression, anxiety, disordered eating. All of these things are what we treat. None of them come wrapped in an individual little box, all meld together. So I think that's a lot where treatment and treatment programs have changed and really so much sophisticated than they were even 20 years. Can you share with us a little bit about what a program like yours would look like after someone's been through primary treatment?
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think treatment's changed dramatically. I think over the last 5 years, there's really been a push for people to really look at what an individual needs specifically rather than try to group it into a box. I remember one time you and I were at a conference, and we were looking at milieus, and they had a great presentation about how they overlapped. But yet they were individualized enough where, you know, somebody could sort of pick out, hey, I need to work on trauma over here or eating disorder here, but then I still need the family component. And I think that, you know, as we move forward and we look at individualized treatment, especially with what we're doing at Creekside, is as I said again, there's no preset plan for when you come in. And I think that every opportunity that we're able to look at a client or an identified patient and say, what is it that you really need versus what was the norm that everybody did? You know, we have people who don't want to do 12-step. Okay, fine. Then let's find something else. You know, we have a client who, I'm never going to go to 12-step, and then all of a sudden found out about yoga 12-step and now is in love with it. So 10 years ago, who would have thought about yoga 12 steps, you know?
Well, there's a gentle step, the gentle path to 12-step. Let me interrupt you at this point, because I do want to say this. One of the things that I think most programs that are excellent do is they combine sort of a threefold model. And I know, Brad, you guys do this. There's a biological piece to it. Do you need medicine? We can help you with that. Get a psychiatrist or whatever you need. So there's the biological piece. Then there's the psychological piece, okay? What are you experiencing? Are you hypersensitive? What skills can we build to help you with your introversion or extroversion? All of these kinds of things. And then that third piece is, what is your environment? What's your social interaction like? And how do we fit some treatment activities or skills or strategies into your environment to give you the best chance for success and you're on your own and back in real life again?
Right. Absolutely. And I think one of the things that, you know, that I love with our program, and I see it with other programs, is we encourage our clients to get back into the environment. because mm-hmm. why not get in the environment now while you have that support within the recovery community? And as you identify maybe additional triggers, or mm-hmm. as you come across, you know, as you come across a challenge, you're in a community where you can address those things and really work through it. And that's just what I love about what I'm seeing now in our communities and what we're doing to help people. And, you know, the perfect example I have is veterans. You know, obviously veterans is near and dear to my heart. Being a combat mm-hmm. medic and being, you know, in the first Gulf War, it's all my friends now are coming back, you know, from Afghanistan things. And we're seeing that we have to treat that population totally different than we've treated anybody else. And that's really where Creekside came from, was, you know, I saw the need to treat veterans with building around them rather than just putting them in the VA. And that's kind of how we came with this. And I see now all the other populations, eating disorders and seniors, of how we could really listen to them and really identify what they need and build it around them, whether it's environmental, whether it's biological, whatever it is that we need. And I think that I'm excited about the times for us now, because I think we can help more individuals and really make it individualized, but still having that community.
Are veterans something that are overlooked in the treatment world, or do you see veterans as having special needs or things that aren't necessarily being addressed, or things that we pay more attention to, maybe?
Yeah, I'm sorry, but I think that here's where, in my opinion, years and years and years ago, the big word was co-occurring disorders, you know,
yeah,
and then all of a sudden
disorders.
Everybody
yes.
did co-occurring. And then it was, you know, we have individualized programs, and then everybody jumped mm-hmm. on individualized programs. And now they have programs with TRICARE opening up, which I love that they did it. But now you have programs out there that are, you know, we treat veterans. And to be honest with you know, that I think that's where the struggle is, because a veteran comes in and a veteran talks a different way. They walk a different way. They have a different mindset. And there's a lot of programs.
Their expenses have been different.
Their experiences
have been different. Sorry.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of programs that are out there that are really extending their clinical staff. They're bringing in veterans to teach them how to deal with veterans and things like that. I think that it's still a long way off. Obviously, the VA is just having issues in certain places. Some VAs do really well. But it's a population that really needs a lot of more attention to it and a lot more work. And it's not just throwing money at it. It's throwing great people who know how to do great work.
What do you think from an aging population? Not that you and I are aging, perish the thought.
No.
But so I know, but someone coming out of a war or coming out of the service now versus when you came out, different kinds of needs, or we just know more, we're able to identify potential issues?
I definitely think that we learn. The history is the greatest teacher. And, you know, I look at tactics used in the military on the battlefield. What the guys are doing now, you know, those were the good things or the mistakes that we made 10 years ago, 20 years ago. And I think that with treatment and how we're going to deal with the veteran population is the same way, is we've made some mistakes in the past. We've done some good things in the past. And I think that we'll build on them. You know, you look at, you know, trauma and hyperbaric chambers and all the new thing, not new mm-hmm. things, but all the things that are now starting to be implemented. And I think that I'm very hopeful for treatment for veterans.
So as far as specific population to aging adults, are there programs that do tailor themselves to that specific demographic?
Yeah, I think that there are a couple really great programs out there. And you mentioned before Karen. I mean, Karen has a senior program that, you know, obviously I think is one of the better ones, you know, in the country. They're not the only one, but they're just, I mean, mm-hmm. if we just focus on them, and I think that their clinical team out there does a great job. Where I think the shortfall is what happens next?
Right. Because that's once exactly right.
Once they've done treatment, you know, then what's next? Because, you know, their options are a little bit more limited. It may be that they have to go live with a family member, or they go to assisted living, and assisted living may not be the right environment for them. So I think that we need, and we being Creekside and the whole community out there, I think that we need to specifically partner with people like you and others that are professionals in mm-hmm. that demographic. And we need to learn what we can do to better support them. And I think that that's the mission of Creekside right now. I know that we're in talks with some groups. You and I have had several talks, and I think you know, that's where we want to be, is we want to be able to help that population, because we know there's going to be specific needs for them. Clinically, absolutely. Figuratively, or physically, and behaviorally, and meds. I mean, it's going to be a different world. So we want to get out in front and try to build what they need.
Absolutely. And think of it this way. I'm 66. My husband's 67. We are the boomer population that's going to be seeking treatment. Again, we feel like we've got tier one pretty well covered. Now comes the fun part, and that is the Step Down Safety Net Recovery. So, Brad Baker, it is always great to talk to you. I think you've given us a lot of valuable information. Very grateful to have you here. When I will talk to you, thank you so much. Thank you all for joining us here on Aging in Place podcast for any stage in life. Have a great day. I'd like to introduce you to a friend of mine, Tracy. Tracy is naturally curious and always creative. And when we were doing the Aging in Place podcast, she said, there are so many quick tips that I can think of offhand. My response, who knew? She's going to be with us every week, giving us a quick tip and a hint that is a practical application.
Thanks, Debbie. This tip might be a challenge, so make it fun. If your family doesn't do this already, now is the time to start. Families are busy, both parents working, kids with their extracurricular activities, time together is short. What I'm saying is turn off the TV. Set a time and day where the family will be all together. Turn off the TV, video games, or even the cell phones need to be put away. Even just an hour of family time improves everyone's mental health. TV sucks up energy, and we can easily become couch potatoes. Take everyone outside and play a game of tag. Can't run? You can always play flashlight tag. Do a little family exercise together. Keep track weekly who does the most sit-ups or toe touches. Winner can choose a family movie to watch at a theater, by the way. And with the TV off, play more music. Everyone can listen to each other's favorite song. You can do it. So what if your son loves alternative music and you love Frank Sinatra? Generations can be opened up to listening to other genres. By the way, some of the newer songs are actually remixes of the older versions. Who knew there are so many things outside that box that sits in your family room? So turn it off.
Hi, I'm Dr. Debbie Lines, and thank you for listening to Aging in Place for Any Stage in Life. We would like to ask you all to give us a review. Of course, preferably 5 stars. Thank you again, and we hope you enjoyed Aging in Place for Any Stage in Life. What a great interview today with Brad Baker. He has so much information. And again, subject of substance abuse can be a tricky one. But talking to Brad and demystifying the whole process is the takeaway today. Don't be afraid to find a professional and seek help. Have a great week here on Aging in Place Podcast for Any Stage in Life.
Aging in Place Podcast is hosted by Debbie Lines and produced by Henrik de Gior. If you have any comments or questions, send an email to debbie@agingInPlacePodcast.com. We would love to hear from you. If you're interested in advertising or sponsoring this podcast, email us at pr@agingInPlacePodcast.com. Thank you for listening to Aging in Place Podcast.